This is MemberCare Media, a media ministry of TWR. Up next, a conversation we believe will be helpful to you. This is a copyright production of MemberCare Media and may not be reproduced without prior written consent.
What is the best method for discipleship and evangelism? Is it even right to ask the question best? Maybe the answer is always, it depends. Well, for the furtherance of the gospel of Jesus Christ, I would like to present the audacity that there actually is a best method for discipleship and evangelism. We ask this question to the many that come through MTI as a part of their training, and you'll get a lot of different answers. You'll get the answer of friendship evangelism, or some will be thinking along the lines of vocations and saying teaching English as a second language, or literature, or radio, or video, or development, or relief, or agriculture, or you just name it. You get a bunch of different answers. What is the best method for discipleship and evangelism? Perhaps I'll meet you on the field someday, and you'll be able to answer and enlighten me. But recently, actually as far back as April of 2004, Jim and Carol Pluteman in World Pulse wrote this: those serving cross-culturally are always looking for the golden key that'll unlock barriers to the gospel. It's imperative that we find creative, innovative methods for outreach. But let's never forget the most powerful means we have for bringing people to Christ: loving each other. Sounds simplistic, but love gives the most profound witness. My family and I were here at MTI, and we were having a family reunion. My father, who is one of these bona fide geniuses who I had a hard time following in his footsteps, was reading a book that he had taken off the shelf and blown the dust off. I was watching with the kids the movie Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. And about 20 minutes into the movie, he's about 120 pages into this book. And this book is the report of the Centenarian Conference on the Protestant Mission of the World, held in Exeter Hall, London, 1888. And he started to read, and it piqued my interest. And here's what he read from the book. This is a Reverend Professor Drummond of Free Church College, Glasgow. He wrote this: I was taught to believe that the essential to a missionary was strong faith. I have since learned that it is more essential for him to have great love. I was taught out there that he needed to have great knowledge. I have learned that more than knowledge even is required personal character. I've met men in mission fields in different parts of the world. And let me just pause here to say that's pretty amazing for that time. That means he's been on quite a bit of time on ships. I've met men in mission fields in different parts of the world who could make zealous addresses at evangelical meetings at home, who left for their fields of labor, laden with testimonies from churches and Sunday schools, but who became utterly demoralized within a year's time because they had not learned that love was a greater thing than faith. That is a neglected part of a missionary's education, it seems to me, and yet a most essential one. I would say that the thing to be certain of in picking a man for such a field is Africa, where the strain upon a man's character is tremendous and the strain upon his spiritual life, owing to the isolation, is even more tremendous, that we must be sure we're sending a man of character and heart, morally sound to the core, with a large and brotherly love for the nationals. It will be centuries before these men about Lake Nyasha, which is part of my family history with Africa Inland Mission and Tanzania, it will be centuries yet before these men about Lake Nyasha can learn much about theology. They watch the lives of the men that we send there, and everything that is done, every gesticulation, every action, is telegraphed over the whole community, and it makes its mark. And it is only by the grace of God as interpreted in the lives of men that we can bring these people to Christ Jesus. Now, I remember when I first heard this quote, something inside of me didn't like this setting up of love greater than faith. What's going on with that? And then it struck me, wait, this is Corinthians. This is 1 Corinthians 13. There therefore remains these three, faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. Best method, discipleship and evangelism, definitely our love one for another. Recently, my mother-in-law passed away of cancer. And before she passed away, she came over our house and she sat me, my wife, all of our kids down and said, I have some last words, some bits of advice. And you can imagine that even as young as my five-year-old daughter was paying attention. When you know somebody's going to die and they want to impart wisdom to you, you pay attention. And those words are not minced. They go straight to the point. A great study, if you ever want to do it, is study John 13 through 18. Christ's last words. He's already said, I'm going to die. And he goes into things that really matter. And this is that point in John 13 when he says, as I have loved you, so must you love one another. By this, all men will know that you're my disciples, by your love one for another. And skip ahead. Go to John 17 if you want. And here we see his high priestly prayer. And five times he says, that they may be one, 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 that they may be one. Five times he says it. Two or three times he says, so that the world will know. Again, the most profound witness is our love one for another. We forget it. If I'm going to meet you overseas, I'm going to guess. If I caught you and you hadn't heard this program, and I'd say, so how's your discipleship and evangelism going? You would give me numbers. You would tell me about the programs. You might even tell me about converts. But in terms of your faithfulness, it becomes so imperative. Think of it in the opposite. Think of maybe some verses that we see in Scripture. I implore you on God's behalf, be reckoned. Son, stop it. Son, please knock it off. What are you doing, son? I'm talking here. I'm witnessing. Our actions with each other speak louder than our words. They speak louder than our programs. Here's the kicker. The kicker is God's asked us to love each other, and that's like asking us to love somebody who's pretty abnormal and who's pretty fallen. This is not a kumbaya party. It's not they're known by their love one for another because they sing songs together, because they have good feelings and it's all good times. It's actually love one for another is in the context of actually some pretty hard things. And we know it for those of us that are laboring in cultures that are not our own. We know beyond a shadow of a doubt that Satan is much like Napoleon. He wants to divide and conquer. So how these things play out, they play out in whether we're going to forgive or not. They play out in how we manage conflict with each other. They play out in whether we just, when we hit a rough spot with somebody else, do we take our marbles and go home? In his book, one of the best books on Christian community, I think, for me, it's a great book on Christian community. It's what he would probably call Bonhoeffer for dummies. John Ortberg, in his book, Everybody's Normal Till You Get to Know Them, writes this in the opening of his book. In certain stores, you'll find a section of merchandise available at greatly reduced prices. The tip-off is a particular tag you'll see on all the items in that area. Each tag carries the same word, as is. This is a euphemistic way of saying these are damaged goods. Sometimes they're called slightly irregular. The store is issuing you a fair warning. This is the department of something's gone wrong. You're going to find a flaw here. And we're not going to tell you where the flaw is. You have to look for it. But we know it's there. And when you find it, and you will find it, do not come whining and sniveling to us, because there's a fundamental role when dealing with merchandise in this corner of the store. No returns, no refunds, no exchanges. If you were looking for perfection, you walked down the wrong aisle. You have received a fair warning. If you want this item, there's only one way to obtain it. You must take it as is. When you are starting to deal with humans in the context of this new command to love one another, as I, there's the new part, as I, such sacrificial love, you've come to the as-is corner of the universe. The dilemma is we're all tempted out there to live with the illusion that somewhere out there are people who are normal, just like us. And those are the people that I'll love. When we enter into relationships with this illusion that people are normal, we resist the truth that they are not. And instead, we enter into an endless attempt to fix them or control them or pretend that they are what they're not. One of the greatest marks of maturity is to accept the fact that everybody comes as is. Remember, some of us will remember that little button that hit all over the world that had just letters on it. Please be patient. God is not yet finished with me. Same thing, as is. Perhaps one of my own personal convictions. The biggest knife that has really pierced my heart was about 3 years ago. And it was by a quote by Bonhoeffer in his book, Life Together. He says that we all have these dreams of what community should look like. And here's what he writes. But God's grace quickly frustrates all such dreams. A great disillusionment with others and with Christians in general, and if we're fortunate with ourselves, is bound to overwhelm us as surely as God desires to lead us to an understanding of genuine Christian community. The sooner this moment of disillusionment comes over the individual and the community, the better for both. Those who love their dream of a Christian community, picture a scale here, if you will, and on one side is your dream of Christian community. So let me go back to the quote. Those who love their dream of Christian community more than Christian community itself become destroyers of that Christian community, even though their personal intentions may be ever so honest, earnest, and sacrificial. Wow. Do you love your dream of Christian community? Have you set up qualifications on who you will love and who you will not love? If so, you may be unwittingly undermining the most profound witness that you can have. Your love for each other, and especially those that are toughest in your life. My wife and I, once we had four kids, found a verse in Proverbs that has ministered to us greatly. It's the verse that says, where there is no oxen, the manger is clean. If you, now consider the agrarian society this was stated in. If you were a wealthy individual, you had a barn that routinely needed mucked. It stinks. If you're in productive ministry, it doesn't mean that it's this kumbaya party where there's this love one for another. It actually, you will often be knee-high in other people's stuff. You need to muck it. But there's still a call to love one another deeply from the heart. It's said of the disciple John in his last years on the island of Patmos that all he could be found muttering was, love one another, love one another, love one another. The essence of the gospel continues to be, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Love your neighbor as yourself. It continues and always will be the most profound witness, the best way for discipleship and evangelism.
This feature is a presentation of Member Care Media. Thanks for taking the time to listen. We invite you to check out our website further. We offer audio features and resources to help you in your work and daily life. In addition, we have links to other helpful websites that will be an encouragement to you and your family. This is a copyright production of Member Care Media and may not be reproduced without prior written consent.